Talks America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. After the next commercial break, we're going to have Dilip Hero with us. He is the author of the new book, Blood of the Earth. He is also the author of one of the finest books, if not the finest book, that I've come across in the English language as it relates to Iran, and it's entitled The Iranian Labyrinth. If you're interested in knowing something about ancient Persia, Dilip Hero covers it. If you're interested in knowing a lot about contemporary Iran, especially dealing with all of the aspects of Iran's relationship with this country in the post-World War II period, particularly from 1953 onward, you will want to read The Iranian Labyrinth. And Dilip Hero has an essay, by the way, which you can find at Tom Englehart's Tom Graham. It's entitled Nuclear Weapons Programs Are About Regime Survival, The Iranian Bomb in a Mad World. I have posted a link to that essay, both at Breaking All the Rules News today, where Mr. Hero's appearance on this show is the headline story at BATR News. You can also go to my blog, Mark Dankos America, at Al Bawaba, the Middle East Gateway in Amman, Jordan. And the lead story in that blog this morning is Mr. Hero's appearance on this show. And both of those places, Al Bawaba, my Mark Dankos America blog, and also BATR News, have a clickable link to Mr. Hero's essay that has been posted by Tom Englehart at tomdispatch.com. There are all kinds of things that Mr. Hero says in this essay, and also in a new chapter of the UK version of his book, The Iranian Labyrinth, that I think are well worth your time to take a look at. One of the paragraphs that leaped out at me when I was reading his essay for Tom Englehart was as follows. U.S. credibility in Tehran is low. On the eve of the January 1981 release of the hostages taken at the U.S. Embassy in November of 1979, the United States agreed in the Algiers Accord not to interfere in Iran's internal affairs. In December of 1995, however, now, keep in mind, folks, Bill Clinton was president at that time. In December of 1995, however, it began violating that agreement when, following the passage of a directive by Congress sanctioning $18 million for a covert action program against Iran, the Clinton White House announced that the sum would be spent to cultivate new enemies of the Islamic regime. Since then, that annual sum has risen to $75 million under George Bush, and the Bush White House has launched a series of covert operations to undermine the Iranian regime. They have dispatched aircraft carrier strike forces through the Strait of Hormuz in classic gunboat diplomacy fashion, and had its vice president, Mr. Cheney, issue a series of warnings to Iran from the deck of the USS John C. Stennis, floating barely 150 miles off the Iranian coast. Of all the things I want to talk to Dilip Hero about this morning when we bring him on after the first commercial break, this is one of the things we want to zero in on. The U.S. agreed in the Algiers Accord not to interfere in Iran's internal affairs. And yet from 1995 onward, our government has been appropriating millions of dollars for that very purpose. Look at what is going on in Azerbaijan, folks. What is going on in Khuzestan province in Iran or Balochistan province? There is clear evidence corroborated by Philip Giraldi of Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative, who's going to be on this show very early Thursday morning just for an hour. A lot of evidence that's coming forth that the United States and Israel and Britain are involved in some real funny business with Iran that might explain why Iran wants a nuclear weapon. We'll be back with Dilip Hero. This is Mark Dankos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world? Jesus answered them, You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Attention gardeners. If you've ever wanted to grow the absolute best tasting fruits and vegetables imaginable, well, here's exciting news. There's a new product called ProtoGrow, and it's dynamite in the garden. ProtoGrow is a bioactive superfood for plants. It works by providing true broad spectrum nutrition, allowing plants to achieve their full genetic expression. So what does this mean in the garden? It means mouth-watering fruits and vegetables, brilliantly colored flowers, herbs that finally grow to medicinal strength, blue ribbon garden produce jam-packed with bioavailable minerals and trace elements, giant pumpkins, even high-potency Hybrix wheatgrass. ProtoGrow is a proprietary blend of full-spectrum nutrients from the sea. It literally contains the basic building blocks of life itself. In fact, ProtoGrow is so effective at producing rapid plant growth in record time that it almost forces plants to grow even under the worst light and soil conditions. To grow tasty fruits and vegetables right now, go to growlikecrazy.com or call 877-327-0365.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Mark Danfoss, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Middle Eastern expert Dilip Hero, who hooks up with us from England. Mr. Hero is the author of a laundry list of incredible books, including Blood of the Earth, his new effort, The Iranian Labyrinth. I've read both of those books in their entirety. And among many of the other things that one can avail oneself of when it comes to this man's research and analysis, this includes a book that is considered to be the leading, most authoritative book ever written on the Iran-Iraq conflict from 1980 to 1988. That one's entitled The Longest War, The Iran-Iraq Military Conflict. That came out in 1991. And as we talk to Mr. Hero today, we want to get his take on what is going on with Bush administration policy as it relates to Iran and why it might be logical. Logical, as Mr. Hero puts it in his own words in his latest essay for Tom Englehart, regarding why the Iranian regime might want to have a weaponized nuclear program. Dilip, how are you, sir?
You're very well. Thank you very much. I'm very well. Thank you.
Yes. You know, reading just your essay for Tom Englehart, Dilip, in the last couple of days, I'm struck by so many things just in that essay alone that we could focus upon this morning. I've also read the epilogue that you sent me to the UK version of your book, The Iranian Labyrinth. But just as far as the Engelhardt essay is concerned, you noted what I read on the air from your essay before the last commercial break, and that is that the United States agreed in the Algiers Accord in January 1981, agreed in the Algiers Accord not to interfere in Iran's internal affairs. We did this apparently just before Iran released the American hostages that had been taken at the U.S. Embassy in November 1979. Now, in that accord, the U.S. said we will not interfere in Iran's internal affairs. They might have, and I think by implication, were thinking about what this country did in 1953 in Iran. But in December of 1995, you note that the U.S. began violating that agreement when Congress sanctioned $18 million for a covert action program against Iran. This is when Bill Clinton was president. Now that annual sum has risen to $75 million, as you cited, under Mr. Bush. And we're seeing in the international media reference to covert operations against that country going on in three or four different provinces in Iran that seem to have American, Israeli, and British fingerprints all over them. And now the president has dispatched these naval aircraft carrier strike forces to the region. And Mr. Cheney's been saying some rather confrontational things as well in regard to this whole situation. What are we as Americans to make of all of this?
Yeah, I think, you know, what's being done is, I should say, a two-track policy. One is, of course, that just to keep Condi Rice, the Secretary of State, happy, America is part of the diplomatic talks which are going on between Iran and the Western powers, including Europeans. You know, that is one track. The other track is essentially that, in a way, shall I say, is the Cheney faction, to keep them pacified. Of course, you can take it for granted that already the Pentagon has pinpointed all the targets to be hit and how long it will take and what damage they can cause, et cetera, et cetera. That should be, you know, taken as a given. You know, I don't think there's any dispute about it. It's a question of whether or not and at what point it will be go. Now, in between this, there's another third position. The third position is simply this. You see, and I try and explain things from the bottom up. There is, of course, a very huge lobby in America which really wants to get at the mullahs after having got rid of Saddam Hussein. Now, whatever be their reasons, now they have their input, and their input will go something like this. Iran is not a kind of a unified nation of 70 million people. The Persian speakers, who are the large section, are only half of the population. And then there are Azeris, who are 30% of the population. Then there are Kurds, and then there are Balochis, then there are Turkmen. So you see, what we should do, I mean, this is quite honestly the way to convince the gentleman from Crawford, Texas, to tell him, Mr. President, you see, this is the weakness of the Iranian system, because the people who are in power, you know, we always think of Persian-speaking Iranians, we don't think of the minorities. So what we should do is to start destabilizing the regime by stoking up the minorities' demands for separation, war powers from the center, etc., etc. Now, first of all, even the figures that are given out, like that Persian speakers are only 50%, wrong. W-R-O-N-G, wrong. And anybody wants to check out, they should check out my Dictionary of the Middle East, which is called Essential Middle East, a Comprehensive Guide, published in 2003. Those are reliable figures, and they are not the CIA figures. They are not the figures given out by the Iranian exile, of whom there are hundreds of thousands in the USA and in Europe. The Persian speakers are 65%. And the Azeris are 20%, not 30%, 20%. Now, here is the thing which these guys don't understand, and which, again, is in my dictionary. There is an entry on the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Now, I have to say it very slowly. Ali Khamenei is an Azeri speaker. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei was born in a family whose mother tongue is Azeri. He was born in the city of Mashhad, and of course, as an Iranian, he fluent in Persian. Not only all the mullahs in Iran are fluent in Arabic, because they cannot become mullahs unless they go through theological college and therefore are fluent in the Quran, with Arabic, which they read in the Quran in its original Arabic. Now, you see, how do you expect the Azeris, of course, they are a minority, 20%, and they are concentrated in the northwest next to Azerbaijan, that the word Azeri and Azerbaijan go together. How do you expect them to rise up against a regime which has a supreme leader who speaks the same language and comes from the same ethnic minority? Okay, I'm just giving you one simple example.
Yes.
So basically, it's not on. But that doesn't mean that the U.S. CIA as well as the DIA, Defense Intelligence, and they have doesn't mean they have not already sent in or activated the Iranian exile group of the Mujahideen Khalq to start doing sabotage within Iran. So that process is on. So I'm saying there are three processes going on. One is talking. Okay, we can come to that later on, because already Iran has said to the Mr. Al-Bardai of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, that inspectors can come in and we can answer the questions you want answered, and that is the latest news. That's one process which will go on for quite a while. And the second is, of course, as you pointed out, as everybody knows, all these aircraft carriers who are floating around the Gulf, they have all their targets ready, et cetera, et cetera. So Dick Cheney camp has been said, okay, we are not, you know, sleeping, we're doing that. In between, the third process is going on, undermining the regime through these, you know, covert actions. So all these things are going on.
Well, yes, and to me, as I watch this whole thing, putting this in the context of what you cite about the Algiers Accord and what the United States said it would not do in January of 1981, I look at all of this as an American who is not a Middle Eastern expert in any sense of the word. I lived in Iran years ago for a time when my parents were stationed there, but I speak very little of the language. As I look at this whole thing, are we in fact to see by these actions of the U.S. Just in the last couple of years, in fact, a circumstance where we can say that war with Iran has already been undertaken? In other words, when I look at the violation of Iranian airspace and some of these things that have taken place just in Azerbaijan alone, it looks to me like with violations of airspace and the utilization of American commandos, Cy Hirsch has talked about this in the New Yorker, that the U.S. has already done several things that international law would say are acts of war.
Well, that's quite true. I think U.S. has done so many things which are illegal. I mean, do I have to say, Mark, that, you know, the war invasion of Iraq was illegal? And I am not the one to say. Kofi Annan, Secretary General of the United Nations, publicly said on a BBC radio interview that this war was illegal. Okay, so I think that, because you see, if it's quite simple, and I'm not being cynical, I'm being realistic. If you have the biggest gun in the neighborhood, and you know, you're a tough guy, the law doesn't apply to you. You know, you can do whatever and nobody's going to challenge you, and that's basically American power. Pentagon is the most lethal machine ever, except that Iraq proves that military power is not enough. We see that the Sunni minority, which is about 5 million in Iraq now, is basically put the huge Pentagon machine at a standstill. See, so what I mean is that it's okay, you can have big powers, etc. Now, returning to the point about interference in the Iranian internal affairs, and this happened under the during the days of good old Bill Clinton, not the bad guy like Bush, an ignorant fellow like Mr. Bush, but very intelligent man. That policy has continued, you know, and it has been, shall I say, intensified. More interestingly, here is something which happened during the days of Bill Clinton, and that is actually in the epilogue of my book on the British edition, which I sent you, and this here I am reading Very brief excerpt.
We'll be back with Dilip Hero, author of The Iranian Labyrinth, when Mark Dankos America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned for this fascinating man. We'll be back.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously. Live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Across America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Middle Eastern expert Dilip Hero from London. He is the author of The Iranian Labyrinth, The New Blood of the Earth. And if you go back to 1991, Mr. Hero has written a book that I have been working my way through. It is the definitive account of the Iran-Iraq War from 1980 to 1988. That one's entitled The Longest War, The Iran-Iraq Military Conflict. Dilip Hero has written an incredible number of books over a very long period of time, going back, I think, to 1969. You won't go wrong with any of these volumes, folks. I own three of them personally, and at some point I'm going to pick up a copy of his Dictionary of the Middle East, which he made reference to. That one is a 1996 effort. Dilip, pick it up with where you were before the break. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, what I was saying, you know, that it's in the days of President Clinton, these things continued. And what really is alarming is this fact, which is in the book by James Ryson, who, as you know, is a New York Times reporter on national security, and he published a book last year called State of War, The Secret History of the CIA and the Bush Administration, in which he says Clinton administration authorized the CIA to mount its audacious Operation Merlin, M-E-R-L-I-N, in February 2000. The CIA dispatched a Soviet-era defector, a former Soviet nuclear weapons engineer, to Vienna, where, posing as an unemployed scientist selling nuclear secrets, he was instructed to contact the Iranian representative dealing with the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA. He was carrying doctored Soviet blueprints leaked to the CIA by another Soviet defector for a triggering device for an atom bomb, because you need a triggering device to actually explode it. Had the Iranians used these blueprints to build a trigger over the next many years, they would have ended up with a disappointing fizzle instead of a mushroom cloud. However, the Russian scientist spotted the defect in the design, told his CIA handlers, but they advised him to go ahead with the plan, and once he was in Vienna, afraid that the Iranians would detect the flaw, he opened his sealed document and inserted a note pointing out the errors in the design. He then delivered the package to the apartment of the Iranian representative without meeting anybody. Now, there is something which is truly alarming, because in the past, the CIA had played tricks on adversaries regarding conventional arms, but it was the first time the CIA had extended this tactic to an unconventional weapon once it had secured authorization at the highest level. Now, this is James Ryson's book. So what I'm saying is, you see, now, all of this is not under Bush. We're talking Bill Clinton. That means even Bill Clinton was not reconciled to the fact of Islamic Republic existence and to, you know, accord it the legitimacy which it has with Moscow, it has it with European Union, it has with China, it has with India. All of them recognize the present regime as legitimate and do the dealing with as equals. Now, see, this is what's interesting. Now, of course, the Iranians did not fall into that trap. See, so what is really happening, of course, I said earlier that, you know, these covert actions are going on, and they have been going on since, 2002, in fact. And what's happened, James Ryson also points out, that the CIA had set up its ring in Iran, but at one point, a high CIA official gave information to one of the agents, you know, of course, Iranian agent within Iran, and that particular guy happened to be a double agent. And he got all information as to all the whole the network that the CIA had set up within Iran. And, of course, he leaked that, and the Iranian government took care of that. So, you see, and after that particular, what you may call human intelligence ring was destroyed, after that, Iranians found a lot of drones flying all over Iran. And even amongst the drones, quite a few of them, at least, were shut down by the Iranian military, but they would never advertise what they are doing. See, and so what I'm suggesting by giving these, you know, specific details, they are all documented details, not speculation, that even though, of course, America, the CIA, the DIA, and other intelligence agencies are very busy, they have a fairly strong opposition. That means the Iranian intelligence agency is also quite efficient, you know, and they, of course, you know, are on the alert what's going on, and of course, you know, and that's something which one has to keep in mind.
Yes, and as I was reading your account last night of this, Dilip, where you make reference to James Ryson and what he talks about with this whole business of Operation Merlin in February of 2000 going on again under Bill Clinton in this instance, it brought back to me something that Alan Dulles said many, many years ago, when he said that as far as American intelligence activities were concerned, those who wanted to bring it under constitutional scrutiny in this country were operating with an illusory concept, because either the intelligence insiders would fool the outsiders, or they would end up fooling themselves. We'll be back with Dilip Hero. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Is there a connection between Operation Ajax in 1953 and the mentality behind Operation Merlin in February of 2000? We'll ask Dilip that when we come back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a biweekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined today by Dilip Hero, who has written so many books on the Middle East, including The Iranian Labyrinth and Blood of the Earth. There is his Dictionary of the Middle East from 1996 comes to mind, and also his 1991 volume, The Longest War, The Iran-Iraq Military Conflict, considered to be the definitive work on the Iran-Iraq War from 1980 to 1988. At least in the English language, it is the definitive work, as near as I can tell. There are a couple of items, folks, that may relate to what we're talking about in an interesting kind of way with Dilip this morning. Go to yesterday's Financial Times of London, Monday, June 25th, page 8. Interesting story on Japanese banks curbing loans to Iran. Private sector acts after U.S. pressure. Iranian oil payment request rejected. That's a post in the London Financial Times yesterday. that gets into the whole business of central banking, dollars as opposed to euros in regard to how transactions are going to be conducted when it comes to purchasing and selling oil. All kinds of interesting things afoot. The other thing that I mentioned earlier on this broadcast, Ron Paul, the Republican congressman from Texas, who seems to be the only non-neocon running in the Republican primaries. But Ron Paul, of course, is the one who made reference to 1953 and what happened over there between the United States and Iran in that year with Operation Ajax. He was taken to task by Rudolph Giuliani in the Fox presidential debate for discussing that. Ron Paul has held his ground. But interestingly enough, in Iowa, the Iowans for Tax Relief and the so-called Iowa Christian Alliance are not allowing Ron Paul to participate in the Republican presidential debates that those two Iowan-based groups are sponsoring on the 30th of June. That doesn't seem to be a very strong commitment, folks, to the principles of Madison and Jefferson. The folks in the Republican Party, I would argue, that represent multinational corporate interests and the Israeli lobby apparently don't want Ron Paul's foreign policy views, and for that matter his domestic policy views, to be brought before the voters. Bad enough when that's going on in corporate media, but when groups like the Iowa Christian Alliance and Iowans for Tax Relief are doing that sort of thing, there's a very serious problem with integrity, it seems to me, and openness and accountability in our political process in this country. They have not responded to my invitation to come on this show at some juncture to discuss their decision to keep Ron Paul out of those conversations up there in Iowa on the 30th. But I think we can read between the lines and see obviously whose fingerprints are all over that decision. And again, it does not say much for the American political process that kind of stifling of the free exchange of ideas has become such a staple of the American diet in our lifetimes. Dilip, getting back to our conversation then, all kinds of things that we can really cover here be from your epilogue in your UK version of the Iranian Labyrinth, as well as your essay for Tom Englehart. But you discuss the fact that the Bush administration has had five options on Iran. This comes up in page 364 of your epilogue in the UK version of the Iranian Labyrinth. What are those five options, and what do you think the Bush administration either has selected or is about to select among the five options available to it in dealing with Ahmadinejad and Iran?
Yeah, I think the first one will be, you know, do to Iran what Bush and Blair did to Iraq, fully fledged invasion, occupation, and so on. I think that particular option simply not on for the practical reasons. There aren't enough boots in the Pentagon to do that kind of a thing. So then the second option is what you may call pinpoint airstrikes on nuclear facilities. There again, there's a particular problem. Of course, there are 40 major nuclear facilities in Iran, but at the same time, the centrifuges, which are the center of the whole program, which is, they are the ones which enrich uranium. Now, centrifuges are being manufactured in different workshops spread all over Iran, you know, some of them in the back alleys and small workshops and so on. So if the U.S. or the Pentagon wants to completely destroy Iran's ability to restart its program, they would have to actually minor pinpoints of these small workshops to take them out. And that would be very difficult to do without actually killing lots of civilians. So I think that, again, creates a certain problem. Then the third option, of course, is, you know, to undermine the system by destabilizing it, by encouraging the minorities to agitate for secession and, you know, that kind of a thing, which, as I discussed earlier, simply would not happen simply because the major minority Azeris, A-Z-E-R-I, Azeris, they are the same as ethnic group as the supreme leader himself. So that itself is not getting very far. Of course, that doesn't mean it's not going on. It is going on, but I think the success from the American point of view has been rather quite minimum. Then finally, of course, you know, you can have a fourth option is, tightening up sanctions against Iran through the United Nations Security Council, and that process is already on. Of course, as you know, there have been two sets of sanctions, which is basically giving the names of, say, about 12 people involved in the program, and they cannot travel abroad, and their assets are to be frozen, and so on. And, of course, some companies as well. But I'm afraid this, again, doesn't really work very well because, you see, what happens is, let's say you are banning company Z. So what do? You set up a company M, which will be a new company M. So new company M will be doing things which Z was doing before. So, you see, that, again, is not really working, and it's not going to be effective. The only economic sanctions which will work will be oil embargo, to say to the Security Council of the United Nations, no country should buy oil from Iran, and that will really hurt the economy. But what are we talking about? Oil is already $70 a barrel. Iran is the second largest oil exporter within OPEC, Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, and the fourth largest overall in the world. So if you take out Iranian oil, the price will go up $150, $200 a barrel, and it's going to affect the economy all over the place. That's one. Secondly, who is going to be able to monitor that oil does not leak out? Because, see, Iran has a coastline of 900 million along the Persian Gulf, along the Arabian Sea. Iran has land and fuel, the water borders with 10 countries. And so there's so much demand for oil, who's going to stop the trucks which will be, for example, move from Iran to Pakistan or to Afghanistan or to Armenia? Who's going to do the policing? It's simply not possible. So even if the sanctions are put on, there will be so much leakage of oil that they would not be effective. And then finally, as I said, one is about continuing to talk to Iran at the diplomatic plane and a diplomatic arena, and that's what's happening. You see, as far as Iranians are concerned, let me just briefly say what they want. Iranians are very upset, doesn't matter for what reason, that their case was taken out of the IAEA in Vienna and put before the UN Security Council in February of last year, and that really upset them. Of course, by now we know the arm twisting that the U.S. did to get a certain number of votes within the IAEA in Vienna, but it doesn't matter. And the Iranians would want the whole thing to go back to the IAEA, and in return, they are prepared to do certain things, which is they will answer all the questions which have been unanswered so far. So they are trying to bargain. Now, this bargaining can go on for quite some time. Okay, so the only sensible option, which Europeans understand, which European foreign policy, Solana has constantly said, we keep talking, which El-Baradei has said, that there are, in his interview on the BBC about 4 weeks ago, he said, there are some crazies in America who want to attack Iran militarily, and basically it's madness. See, but that doesn't mean they are going to go away, but I think that is the one path which should be pursued, and of course, even compromises can be made. You see, if you have the will to do certain things, it's always possible. Let me give a specific example. We know that Iran has up to 3,000 centrifuges working now. Whether they are working at slow speed or high speed doesn't matter. They are slowly learning the technology, etc., etc. Now, the compromise could be, and basically you cannot make this bomb. And again, remember, Mark, even if you have the 90% enriched uranium, unless you have a triggering device, it wouldn't work. It's almost like you have a matchbox, but you don't have the surface to rub it against. Or if you have a gun, but you don't have the ammunition. So what? The gun is a gun, so it doesn't have ammunition. So the same way, unless Iran has a triggering device, it would not be able to actually manufacture proper atom bomb. And that is a long way away. I'm just not talking only of uranium enrichment. The next barrier is the triggering device. That's why Clinton and company wanted to entice Iranian to go on the wrong path. So I think that compromise can be, Okay, we know that you have mastered the technology of enriching uranium, and you see it's the same machine, centrifuge, which can give you 5% enriched uranium for generating electricity. It can give you 90% enriched uranium, which can give you a bomb, okay, as a fuel for the bomb. Okay, so they can say, okay, you have mastered technology, and this is not me saying. Al-Badai has said that. You know, the head of IAEA has said they already mastered technology, so it's no use going on the Security Council to suspend enrichment, because they already know. So what you can do, the compromise, okay, we allow you to carry on doing your work on a laboratory scale, not an industrial scale, because to be able to produce enough enriched uranium for a bomb, they have to go to something like 32,000 centrifuges. They only got the 3,000, and they have to run them at a very high speed. So that kind of a compromise can be made at a certain point, if there is a will. But of course there is no will, because, you know, there is simply the thing that, you have to suspend, completely suspend, then we will talk to you, so what? Because the Iranians have been through this drill before. They stopped for 2 years, this enrichment process, etc., etc., while they were talking to the Europeans, and at the end, Europeans came out and gave them what they call candy box with no candy inside. They didn't offer them anything substantial, and therefore, the Iranians have learned, the proverb, once bitten, twice shy. So I think that is basically what's happening.
Yes, and as I look at this whole thing, Dilip, one of the most obvious ironies in this whole situation to me is that you have a situation where with Operation Ajax in 1953 in Iran, which has been a source of conversation between myself and several other guests who've been on this show. And then, of course, there's what you cite, Dilip, the whole business of Operation Merlin that took place in 2000 that Mr. Risen has chronicled, that was going on under Bill Clinton. Now we're talking about what seems to be an entirely new level of overt and covert actions being taken against Iran by the Bush administration. Some of that clearly seems to involve paramilitary operations going on in provinces of Iran. Azerbaijan comes up, Khuzestan province comes up, Balochistan province is mentioned from time to time in the international media. And then, of course, there are the overt deployments of the American aircraft carriers and some of Mr. Cheney's rhetoric that he issued from the Stennis. Then there's the whole thing that we were reading about in the London Financial Times from yesterday in regard to certain transactions going on at the behest of Washington within the central banking community to isolate Iran financially and economically. Now, when I look at all of these things, it seems to me that if one can make the case, and I think you've made it to my satisfaction, that the United States has fundamentally violated the so-called Algiers Accord of January of 1981, where it agreed not to be interfering in the internal affairs of Iran again, that with all of the evidence that's right up front, that's out there in the public arena, that that's exactly what we're doing, what the United States is doing, why not take a different path as far as the United States government is concerned? To me, as I'm looking at this whole thing, thinking about the history of the American-Iranian relationship, especially since 1953, and I think of all the tragedies that have happened in the last half century and all of the miscommunication and mistrust on both sides. And then I look at an American situation where clearly when it comes to India, Pakistan, and most importantly, Israel, the United States has held Iran provably to a completely different standard on this issue of nuclear nonproliferation than any of these other states, especially Israel. Why is the United States doing that? How does the United States get away with that discrepancy when it comes to the international community, which quite clearly can see that there is a difference in the way that the Americans have approached this? And what about a different tact on the part of the American government when it comes to this situation of negotiating with Ahmadinejad, where we say, okay, if we are trying to deny you the opportunity to have a weaponized nuclear program, nuclear power program, we're going to bring Israel under the same International Atomic Energy Agency inspection regime as Iran, and if Israel doesn't buy that, then we are going to alter the nature of our political relationship with Israel. Why haven't we seen that, in your judgment?
I'm sorry, Mark. I'm afraid you are being
logical. It's humorous, isn't it?
I'm sorry. You are being logical. Okay, but there's no logic here. No, because your reasoning isn't strictly logical. It's almost a computer, because computer has no human bias. Computer would do exactly what you said. But I'm afraid it's not the way. But the one of the, in fact, as you know, the my article for Atom Dispatch that you mentioned, I'll explain again from the bottom upwards. The opening sentence is, for countries small, middling, or great, acquiring nuclear weapons is all about the most basic requirement, the survival of the regime or nation. That's the key. Now, you are saying Israel. Of course, I give the example of Israel. You know, and as you know, Israel was, when we're talking of the 1960s, there were only five countries, four major powers at the UN Security Council, and then of course China, which was not a member of the UN, but anyway, in 64, they exploded their first atom bomb. And
we'll
3 years later.
Yaron, we'll let him continue this conversation with us in regard to Israel and nuclear proliferation. Reminds me of what Tom Englehart has said in his discussion of Dilip Hero's article. Tom Englehart reminds us that the more we invest in and maintain a vast nuclear arsenal, the more we slot those weapons into our strategic and tactical planning, meaning the United States, the more such weapons will proliferate elsewhere. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Imagine if powerful technology existed to help your body neutralize pathogens, revitalize cells, and intensify your immune system. How do you think that might affect your wellness and longevity? One of the most powerful breakthroughs in electromedicine was the multi-wave oscillator created by Drs. Tesla and Lakovsky. More powerful and useful than Rife machines, Evenstar photonic multi-wave oscillators are designed to send trillions of life-enhancing frequencies deep into organic tissue to help eliminate chronic and acute wellness conditions at their source. Over the past 14 years, Evenstar users time and again report excellent results working with a wide range of wellness conditions. To learn why Evenstar may be your perfect wellness and longevity solution, visit evenstarforlife.com or call 888-333-5095. Serious wellness threats are on the rise. Don't you owe it to your family to explore this powerful technology today? evenstarforlife.com, evenstarforlife.com, or 888-333-5095. That's 888-333-5095.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
We'll be right back.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined today by Dilip Hero, author of Blood of the Earth, The Iranian Labyrinth, The Dictionary of the Middle East, and The Longest War, The Iran-Iraq Military Conflict. That, by the way, is just a smattering of all of the things that Dilip Hero has researched and published on the whole question of the Middle East. He is an absolutely prolific writer, an incredible analyst, and I now own, I think, three of his books. I'm about to purchase a couple of additional ones. I'm going to get myself a copy of this Dictionary of the Middle East, which came out in 1996. I wanted to warn Dilip and also the listeners that the next 10 minutes or so tends to be a time for frequent commercial interruption. So I'm going to say just a couple of things here in the next couple of minutes so that when we re-engage with Dilip, we can give him a longer period of time for continuous thought and dialogue with us in regard to what we were just starting to get into in regard to this whole question of Israel and why the United States has one stance toward Israel when it comes to their nuclear policies and their chemical and biological military capabilities, and another position entirely when it comes to Iran. But keep an eye, folks, on this business of Benjamin Netanyahu. He's presently traveling around in the United States today. I'm looking at a post from yesterday's Haaretz, which I made reference to in my conversation with Greg Felton on this show. Barak Ravid of Haaretz reports that Netanyahu is departing for the U.S. in a bid to increase pressure on Iran. Opposition leader and Likud chairman Benjamin Netanyahu on Tuesday will embark for the United States on a visit aimed at increasing financial sanctions against Iran to get it to drop its nuclear program. During his visit, Netanyahu is slated to meet a New York State financial official, asking him to withdraw or freeze hundreds of millions of dollars the state pension funds have invested in Iran. Mr. Netanyahu will then arrive in Washington, where he will meet for talks on the Iranian issue with Vice President Dick Cheney, Democratic Party presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton. They've got all the bases covered, folks, don't they? And Republican presidential hopeful Fred Thompson, who's not even a declared candidate yet for the presidency and the presidential nomination of the Republican Party, and yet Netanyahu is meeting with Fred Thompson. What's going on there, folks? The Likud chairman was recently involved in Florida State Assembly's passing a law sanctioning investments in Iran. Before Prime Minister Ehud Olmert departed for Washington, Netanyahu met with him to inform him of his efforts. That's what the Israeli Haaretz has posted for us as of yesterday in regard to the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu is making the rounds in New York and in Florida and in Washington to get the United States to increase its pressure on the Iranian regime. And yet, folks, I think, as I was mentioning with Dilip Hero, and when we get back to our more prolonged conversation with Dilip, we'll re-engage in this again. Israel, folks, is the chief nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons power in the Middle East. They are believed by all reputable intelligence sources to have 200-plus nuclear bombs at their disposal. Israel has never submitted its program to International Atomic Energy Agency inspection. They have formally denied that they have such a nuclear program. They are not a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and yet we're about to attack Iran. What's the logic of this, folks? I guess I don't see it. We'll be back with Dilip Hero, the author of The Iranian Labyrinth, when Mark Dankoff's America returns live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
A message for all homeowners and prospective homeowners.